Do you charge from the moment you walk in the door when you put
Today is Monday, February the 27th, Lakeland Housing Authority regular board meeting. The time is now 6 p.m.
When you come to the door, which door?
Well, see, when I walk in, I was going to say, well, at least I need a chair here.
How you doing?
It's on.
Okay, everyone, we're going to start our meeting, the regular meeting of our Lakeland Housing Authority. Everyone would join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Nice, a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Take a seat there. We do have a quorum. Currently not here is Commissioner DeCesare and Commissioner Robinson. Is he going to be late?
Probably.
Okay.
He'll be on time.
Okay.
Is your call wrong already?
Okay. Item number one on the agenda is approval of the meeting agenda. Has everyone had a chance to review it?
Yes, sir.
Any changes? This is
question.
Okay.
We have a presentation by Clifton Lawson Allen. If you could just place them like either before or after the public forum.
I was going to put them after the approval of the regular board meeting. Is anyone here for public forum? No, then I'm going to put them right after the approval of the meeting. Of the minutes, I'm sorry.
They're not here yet.
They're not here yet. So we.
What was there someone? What?
Yeah, he's coming.
He's coming.
He's coming.
Okay. Oh, you want to call him? Tell him.
So when he comes, we'll put him in.
You know, if he doesn't make it in time, we're gonna have to deduct something from his pay. You know what I'm saying?
He's gonna pay us time and a half.
Time and a half. That's right. All right. Do I have an approval of the meeting agenda?
Yep. I make a motion we approve the meeting agenda.
Second.
Okay. Roll call.
Commissioner Pimentel.
Aye.
Commissioner Richardson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hall.
Aye.
Commissioner Sanders.
Aye.
And Commissioner Perry.
Aye.
Okay. Agenda has been approved. We're up to item number two on the agenda, the FSS presentation. Do I have anything in here for the FSS presentation?
Yes. Yep. I do, and also give a couple of bios. I think we have two excellent representatives of the FSS program here tonight, who both have done just an outstanding job. First one is Ms. Krista. Through her time in the FSS program, Ms. Stubbs has retained long-term employment and improved her credit score by over 90 points.
Wow, and I need her help.
She could pass her job to child administration. Yeah. But she also said that FSS program taught her the value of valuable lessons about credit. She teaches her children the value of paying bills on time and not spending money that you don't have. And she also developed a budget to teach her children about budgeting. And she created the FSS program to help her become a better version of herself.
That's awesome. I'm looking on getting my son to go live with her for a little bit. That help. He can't seem to get it from me.
Thank you.
Awesome.
I'm taking the picture. Where's the camera?
We have to tell you this. You're required to give us a pizza party after you.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next recipient is Marian Hyacin. During her time in the FSS program, Ms. Hyacin earned a bachelor's degree in the human services from Springfield College. She graduated summa cum laude and is currently holding her master's degree in mental health counseling. Ms. Hyacin and some of her classmates organized the Dream Project, which is a nonprofit group that serves the parent-teacher organization at Crystal Lake Middle School. They serve the students by fundraising for the parent-teacher organization. They also volunteer at school-sponsored events and work with students. The FSS program has helped Ms. Hyacinth stay on track and achieve her personal goals, would put her on a greater pathway to success.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Wow. That's another one I need my son to go.
I graduated Lottie Lottie.
Some of them thank you, Lottie. That was O-Lottie.
Okay.
That's just wrong.
Congratulations.
Don't forget the road.
I myself do thank, you know, everyone for allowing me the opportunity to just, you know, further myself. This was something to help for me and my kids to start us in our own home. And that was one of the biggest things. My oldest son, he's been the one that pushes me to keep me on track to making sure. So this is going to help us with that goal with me. That's my biggest goal, and that was something I wanted to do for him. So I thank everybody who played a part and allowed me this opportunity. I do.
Awesome.
I'd like to thank everyone that played a part into the FSS program, because everyone in this room is a part of Human Services, because we give services to everyone every day. So this program has helped me and my family to get on the right track, and I had a little stumbling falls, but I made it on through, and I'm proud to say that out of my mother's children, I'm the first one to graduate from college.
All right. Okay.
Just keep up
the good. Thank you. Congrats.
Thank you.
Wow. Okay, has everyone had a chance to view and go over the minutes of our board meeting held January 23rd? Okay.
I make a motion to administer the January 23rd meeting.
Okay, we have a second. Okay, any questions, comments, roll call?
Commissioner Penman-Tell.
Aye.
Commissioner Richardson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hall.
Aye.
Commissioner Sanders.
Aye.
And Commissioner Perry.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. The minutes have been approved. We're up to the next item on our agenda, the presentation. Was he supposed to give us a check for like $25 for the held up? Right?
I think so.
Right.
Cheapest ticket I've ever had. Just for the record, my name is Lance Schmidt. I'm a principal with Clifton Larson Allen. And we've done some various things for the Housing Authority over the years.
And just want to add that Lance was recently promoted to partner. So wow. We'd like to think awesome. That his work here helped him to earn that title. another thing to hear.
That's a good day to go. You see what I'm saying? Pizza party.
So now everything is 90% off.
There you go.
That's right.
See, the party can make that decision.
Well, one time. Probably help me out. But it is a pleasure to be here today. In front of you, you should have a copy of the resolution for the adoption of the CMAQ report.
1439.
Which number is it? 1439. Got it.
And I'll just real quick, just a high-level overview of what CMAQ is and kind of why it's important and why it's in front of you today. CMAP is a report that goes to HUD that is scored on how well your Section 8 program is operating. So there are 14 indicators on there, plus one optional one indicator. What those indicators do is they essentially grade the Housing Authority on how well they're operating the program. Certain of those indicators are determined by HUD systems, where they have a lot of information on the Housing Authority, where they just assign a score to the Housing Authority. Other parts of that are what we call self-reporting, meaning that there was some self-review and some self-inspection of some internal documents, whereby the Housing Authority, this was performed by Adalia, she'll review tenant files, she'll look at, you know, some various indicators, and then she'll summarize the results of her work as kind of an independent internal reviewer, and then that goes into this report. That report then goes to HUD, which then HUD then scores the housing authority and provides a score. So you should have there. Now, I should explain what CLA's role was. Idalia did perform all of the CMAP reviews and did compile all of the information for the CMAP report. Now, what the housing authority did, what Cliff Larson Allen did, was we came in, and we've done this over the years. We've kind of consulted with Idalia while she goes through that process. We do come in and review and ensure that the right sample sizes have been selected, the populations have been determined correctly. We review the documentation that really supports this three-page CMAP that you have in front of you. We don't necessarily detail everything. You know, do a detailed review of everything Idalia has done, but we do look at the documentation to support what's being presented to you today did exist. And we did consult with Idalia on that process. So what happens from here is you do have a resolution in front of you. The score... I apologize. I was out of town and just got back into town.
Where is this page?
140-145. Behind tab 6.
I'm 6.
Yeah.
There's a question last.
So the question is that we give that score.
Oh, no, no, it's
Right before seven.
Carlos holding back on you. He's making you earn your money.
Yeah.
So,
this is
the additional email?
Yeah. Okay. I'll do one later. So this attachment here looks like this.
Yep.
This details all of the points that were available for the housing authority and then the points actually earned. The total possible score underneath the 14 indicators is 145 points. Great news for Lakeland Housing Authority. 140 out of the 145 were earned, which if you look down at the very bottom, kind of gives you a legend as to how HUD is going to view the Housing Authority. And the good news is that HUD will view Lakeland Housing Authority for its Section 8 program as a high performer. So the Housing Authority did receive nearly 97% of all the points that are available. So very good news. That's the work of the entire Housing Choice Voucher department and everybody that works in that department. That's not something that can be achieved alone. It does take the cooperation of the entire organization to hit those metrics. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions or anything else to add, Valerie, Carlos, or Adrian?
I have a question for clarity. So the score was just given for the Section 8 component of the Housing Authority?
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
So we lost 5 points on Lisa.
That's a bit wrong.
That's correct.
Okay. That kept us from getting 100, right?
It did.
Okay. And what was the difference for, like, the 5 points?
For the Lisa, the problem is that in 2016 and 2015, we have been dealing with fluctuations in the HUD, how HUD is giving us the subsidy. So when that happens, it's really difficult for the staff to determine how many vouchers to issue, how long it's going to take for the participants to find houses and us to spend that money. So we had a few months that we were unsure on how to do that. So at the end of 2016, we were running really fast, trying to get people house through the Housing Choice Voucher, but we could not find enough houses. So that's the reason why we were only able to reach 98% of the LISA.
That's still a great job.
Just so you know, we received like 2 evaluations. CMAP is on the Section 8 program, and then FAS, PHAS, is for the public housing side.
Oh, good job.
Awesome. Okay. And that's it?
Awesome.
That's it.
I don't know if you all want to go ahead and
let's vote on this resolution. Then, I have a motion to approve resolution
1439.
I'm going to play that number now. 17-1439.
I move that that resolution 17-1439 be approved.
You have a second? Any questions? Roll call.
Commissioner Pimentel?
Aye.
Commissioner Richardson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hall?
Aye.
Commissioner Sanders?
Aye.
Commissioner Perry?
Aye.
Okay, resolution 17-1439 passes. Okay. Then we're back on track. Public forum? No one in the public forum. Any new business?
No, sir.
LHA recovery plan update.
Okay, first, the good news.
Oh, that's bad.
I should say good news. I should say great news.
Okay.
great news. Yeah.
We sold the 10th Street property.
Yay, we got money.
We got $1.3 million.
And the money's in the bank.
Yep.
In the bank.
Unfortunately, it would already be spent, but hey, we got it. Right. Now. And because, as you all know, HUD has mandated that we spend the money exclusively on affordable housing purposes. And so it'll probably be used on Williamstown and on Westlake. Mm-hmm. And then also, just so you all know, I guess they have to take some action on that ED certification, which authorized me to.
Not necessarily. I mean, you want me to talk about it now?
Yeah, go ahead.
One reason why I sent that certification to you the other day.
I came on Sunday.
Because I work on Sunday also. is because I want you to be aware of it, because as we do more development, that type of certification, clarifying what is really already known, that Ben is authorized to sign documents and everything to facilitate a deal, you're going to see more of that. You can formally adopt it if you like, since, again, we had to make sure that we had that in the package. It was after your board meeting. It was not something that would call for a special board meeting. It really just says exactly what he's already authorized to do. But you're going to see more and more of that type of certification as we now, since we have money, we'll be doing more development like that too.
Okay. Yeah, we got money, right?
So, I don't know if you had a chance to drive around the property. I already got it fenced off and all of that. And I imagine they'll be breaking ground any day now, because Circle K has been ready. And again, that's going to be their new prototype store, one that's designed to compete with Wawa and Thornton's. And then the developer had previously committed to having a job fair with the community over there and giving them a preference with hiring once the store opens up. And so with the Robinson's help, mm-hmm. we'll hold them to that.
Oh, yes, sir.
And but we are looking forward to a good project. They are still looking for some partners to come in on the site. Yeah. Some stores and things. So if you're in France and want to open up a store, give them a call.
Do we know when they're going to be complete with the store yet?
I would imagine probably like the summer of next year.
Of next year?
Yeah,
take that long?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, I've seen a Trump building go up in New York in 6 months.
Which one?
Anyone
in New York. How long are you going to do that shelter case? I'm thinking it's going to be like a year. What do y'all think? Wow. 6 months.
But Wawa takes about 6 months in itself.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I'm thinking, at least 6 to 9 months. That's what I'm thinking.
And I promise you, I'm not exaggerating. I've seen a 60-floor Trump building go up in 6 months in New York. Okay. And if they can put up a 64 building in New York in 6 months, Jesus, that little tiny store can go up quick.
What kind of label are they using on that?
that's for yes.
You what are citizens? Yes, right?
Where's the money coming from?
Where's the money coming from?
It's a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer.
At the end, you don't get paid.
I said, but I had that question out there, the developer. I didn't want to do anything to slow them down with
something. Okay.
Right. So.
We didn't want Russian. I mean, Russian.
Burn the tape.
We hope we're joking.
He said he didn't want to rush. That's what he said.
Not what it sounded like.
Okay.
And with Westlake Phase 1, you know, it's moving along slowly but surely. With the demo disc application, you know, that was submitted to HUD beginning of January. We have not heard anything from them except to say where they acknowledge receiving it. And so right now we're going to go with the premise that no news is good news. And probably be submitting a relocation plan within a week where we're going to be requesting vouchers for the families. It's actually 19 families. Well, actually, let me take that back. We're going to say 20 families because there's one household that would probably have to split because the mother has two adult children, and so we'll probably let one of the children, you know, have a voucher of their own. And so, but hopefully HUD will approve that. And so that's a waiting on. And also the phase two, they're moving along with the financing. They're putting together application for the Federal Home Loan Bank, and also with the under the brown paper and the green reuse grant application as well. That's due, I think, on March 6th. Have a public hearing
tomorrow, isn't it?
I think it's tomorrow. Over at the site. And they had a meeting with the city about a week ago, which they indicated went very positively. Even the mayor spoke, you know, positively about Westlake and what we're trying to do and the like, and so city's been very supportive so far. And with the, we also have done environmental assessments of all our public housing sites, which is required on an annual basis by HUD so that we can continue to receive our funding. And all difference is this year, HUD said they don't have the staff to review it, so they encourage us to have the city do the reviews and the city step up to the plate and did them month real quick. And we only have one more joint right, which is actually another incorporated county. And the county submitted the other day, they asked for one bit of information, saying that I need to wrap that one up. And so I sent them that, so she'll wrap that up. And so that's about it. We've implemented 7S. Now we've got to do a little conversion. As you all know, that's about 6 months or so. With the yard, it's just with our financial system that's going smoothly so far.
Okay.
And that's kind of it.
Let me ask a question. I was curious. With the new properties, are we incorporating anything with the new, like, solar energy initiatives and that? Did we get any grants for that?
No grants, but with, like, say, the tax credit application, you get points for energy conservation features and stuff. And so I'd have to check if there's any solar, like, panels. I don't think there are, because the first phase is basically going to be an elderly building. But, you know, we are looking at ways to save money and the like, so.
I always reference that property that they built right off, you know, the Lakeland Square Mall when you're going down. There's a property there that was built. It's like 2 years old, 2 or 3 years old. They have solar panels over all of the buildings, and it's an affordable housing unit. It's not under us, but it's there. It's solar panels on all the buildings. I said, boy, that's something great to do. And in Orlando, a lot of properties that are going up, they're incorporating solar energy with it. I mean, it may be costly at first, but the money that you save, I mean, you're generating your own energy. And they do provide, like Lakeland Electric, they provide like incentives for you're creating your own energy, you know. I don't know, something to look at. And we do get, I don't know if we still would get grants for it, considering we're in 2017 under a different person, but, you know, maybe it's something to look into.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right across, it's right in the same area where the Hampton Hills going that direction.
Oh, that mall. See, where when I was a little boy, Lakeland Square Mall was the old mall down on Memorial. It's now a church.
Oh, that's the old mall? Well, I don't know. I'm not
yeah, see, but you said old. Lakeland. You know, so.
When you were a boy, that was a long time ago.
They were the dinosaurs again.
I have like official. I'll take that. No one heard it. You may want to, because solar is one, but there are a lot of green technologies, and you are familiar with it, but you may want to just take a look at Encore, because that chiller building and the chiller cooling system is pretty unique. Actually, the city of Tampa is now going to copy it at Channel Sign. I have no idea what it will cost, but what the chiller building is it's built on the property, and water coils run underground to all of the buildings. And the way they do air conditioning is to send chilled water from that one site through to the building.
So here we're on 22nd Street over in Tampa, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So again, it's as you study technology, you may at least want to look at that as something then, to go with the solar. Also.
Then they have the green initiative that has to do with the rooftops that they put like plants and trees on top, and it helps to decrease the heat in the summer, which. This is always summer here, that it and you get tax credits. I always remember the Bank of America building in New York, that their corporate headquarters on 6th Avenue is a completely green building. I mean, the entire thing. And that's like the model for the country. And if you look at them, you'll see they have tax credits for all this crap that they do. I mean, if it could save us money and give us, you know, we could get grants to do it, I'm all for the money, you know.
That's and it's on the site where Central Park Village used to be when you were a little boy.
Exactly.
Well, Rich, I apologize. I didn't mean to steal your thunder with your...
No. Go ahead.
So,
no. You're going to
leave out anything?
You expected July closing?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so phase one, that's still the target date, and we're on track for that, so.
Yeah, no, you touched everything. The Williamstown is out the hood for the clear title.
Yeah, we've submitted all of the document to HUD with the exception of the legal opinion, and we reached consensus on the land for the legal opinion last week. We're just waiting for the camera to finalize it. Rather than sending an email today, so hopefully we'll get it tomorrow, either late on the night, or just sometimes work late.
And you've got a meeting coming up on phase two with the green reuse with the city?
Yeah, that's me. I'll talk about tomorrow night, the public hearing.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
So is that it for our LHA recovery plan update?
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. Then we're up to item number 7, Secretary's Report.
Submitted as written.
Housing and Operations.
Submitted as written.
Oh boy, here we go.
Have a good night.
Okay.
Are we looking for that $25 check? He's sneaking out without giving it to us.
What about the pizza party?
That's going to pay for the pizza party. Admin and Finance.
Submitted as written.
You know you're not. You're not getting away that easy.
Well, actually, it should go quick this month because it's the beginning of the year for January.
Right.
And all of the properties started off good. We can look at CLCC. Our net operating income is actually $14,000. So that's positive. When you actually look at the positions in cash, we, according to the balance sheet, we should have $61,900 in cash. And then when you look at the cash report, it's within $2,000 of each other. One thing I do need to comment on is we talked about CMAP and the scoring that happened for Section 8. And outside council reminded me that we also have a score that has to be done on the public housing side. That won't occur until we actually get the unaudited FDS submitted. It's due tomorrow. They give us a 14-day grace period to March 14th before they start deducting points. Because we are working on the interfunds and trying to see now that we have that operating account, our disbursement account is separate from the LHA master, which is something it hadn't been in the past. That was one of the findings way back when the forensic auditor came in 2012, and they made recommendations to segregate the accounts so we get them all segregated and actually have a disbursing account that was non-federal, which we made a payroll account that works concurrently with COCC that sweeps the cost and makes sure that the money's being pulled from the other entities. So now that we've done that, we are in a position where we can take another look at the interfund, see if there are additional interfunds that could be eliminated to get the $2.9 million balance that's owed decreased before we do the submission. So Clifton Larson Allen, specifically Lance, has been working on taking a second look at the interfunds, which is why we're going to exercise our option to take some of the grace period that we have to make sure that any costs that we can actually eliminate with this cycle with CLCC and the interfunds that we take, because I guess within the next year or two, HUD is looking at federalizing. If they stay on the same track, once they federalize CLCC again, that opportunity won't be there. So once those scores are submitted and scored, then we'll know where public housing sits in comparison to the Section 8, if we remain a high performer, or there are other items that we have to work on. But we will be a high performer. When you look at Section 8's financial statements, again, they probably have a positive NOI, $8,000 for the actual admin, $3,000 for the HAP program. The balance sheet reflects $496,000 in cash, which is within $2,000 of what's shown on the cash flow report. Public housing, AMP 1, it has a positive NOI of $10,744. Again, like I said, all of the properties started off positively for January. The balance sheet reflects $1.1 million in cash, which is consistent with what you'll see on the actual cash report. Dakota Park even has a positive NOI before depreciation of $1,437. Collections are within variance. We're 3.4% in collections, higher than what we budgeted. The cash, total cash is around $30,000 according to the balance sheet. And then if you look at the ending balance for the month, it's
$30,000. Renaissance has a positive NOI of $11,000 before depreciation. Again, they're doing their rent collections because it's within 2.58% of the budget rent collections. The balance sheet reflects $1.2 million in total cash. And then the cash report is consistent with an ending balance of $1.2 million. Colton Meadow has a positive NOI before depreciation of $7,281. Balance sheet shows $675,000 in cash. And ending balance on the cash flow report is consistent with the $675,000. Bond Shores, same as Colton Meadows, it has a positive NOI of $1,780. This property has paid all of its deferred developer fees back to Polk County Housing Developers, so they have no more deferred developer fees to actually have to pay, which has given them the opportunity to actually invest in the property. So when you see a lot of the expenses being higher than budgeted, that is because they're actually doing painting, upgrading security system. They're actually investing back in the property now that they don't have to pay deferred developer fees. The balance sheet shows $780,000 in cash, which is consistent with the $779,000 that's shown in the cash flow statement. West Bartow has a positive NOI of $10,161. Their rent collections is 2.8% higher than what we budgeted. The balance sheet shows $515,000 in cash, which is the cash flow report shows $520,000, which just tells me the difference of checks clearing for that property. Hampton Hills, because now we've taken out of the budget the houses that we've sold, they even have a positive cash flow of $963. Their total cash is $232,000, which is reflective of the four houses that sold. And again, it's consistent with what's in the cash flow report. Well, in the cash report. And then Youthville has a positive NOI of $650. Again, we still have to resolve the $76,000 that's shown in PHA master account in their cash, which is why their balance sheet cash is not consistent with the ending balance of $11,009. And that's something that we have Lance with Clifton Larson Allen working on as part of the overall interfunds. The grant reports, basically you have typical movement. The exception is you have the replacement housing factor funds that we have in HUD. The funds have been obligated, but they can't be expended until we actually close on the Williamstown project, which HUD has sent an email in February 16th, last month, trying to get a realistic date of when we could go ahead and get everything closed. Saxon Gilmore explained that we have a contractor that is anxious to get started. We would like to close as soon as possible, but no later than March 15th. Saxon Gilmore made all of HUD's changes on and sent them to HUD except February 20th. So basically, they are waiting for the land use attorney to finalize the opinion letter submitted to the title company and to HUD's Office of General Counsel, so that we can set a date for the Williamstown closing. It is critical that we close this month because we have, the project is about $6.7 million now, which is something I'll talk about when we get to the resolution. $4 million of that money has to be expended by the end of this year. So we can't afford to eat up any more time in pre-development. We really need to get the contractor mobilized and under construction. There are no extensions that we can get
in the expenditure deadlines, considering we've had this money since 1999.
Wow. That's a long time.
Did anybody have any questions?
Just one general question. Is the objective of Youth Build is to help the people become self-sufficient and come out of Bickman Housing Authority units?
Well, their Youth Build is not just, even though we have a program that targets a community, they're not necessarily a Lakeland Housing Authority resident.
Right. So do we have anything to help the people that live in the units to become self-sufficient and come out of those units?
Well, they have
that's
family self-sufficiency
program and FSS. FSS program.
So we did receive a Ross grant. That's one of the grants that's in our grant report, where we do actually now have an active grant to focus on self-sufficiency. But in addition to the Ross grant that we just got, we have maintained since 2009 the Ross FSS grant, which is family self-sufficiency, which again, public housing and Section 8. Both actually give case management services through that grant to either families in Section 8 or families in public housing. So there are actively three Ross grants towards moving our residents.
Yeah. We're open to you soliciting your president to give us more funding.
But no, I was trying to figure out that if we kind of we kill ourselves by trying to get them out of there because then we have less people in, right?
What do you mean?
Well, we have a wait list.
Well, I know we have, yeah, I understand, but some of the apartments are better than my house, so what would be the initiative for them to get out of housing?
If they want to improve their station in life, just like the young lady who was here earlier today, you know, she's able to get a bachelor and a master's degree, and so if you do that, that those type of things, you probably want to move to a different location. And then we also have, like I said, a home ownership program as well, where people want to say, hey, I'm making progress with my life. Mm-hmm. And like in the Youth Build program, that's more or less designed to give, you know, for second chances. To help them, like say, get a GED, because most of them are, you know, high school dropouts for whatever reason, whether it's pregnancy, substance abuse, you know, just, you know, lost,
right?
And you're trying to help them to get back on track. None of our program going to solve all of their issues, mm-hmm. but we just try to help them to get on the right track or at least get something where they can start making their way, you know, to be productive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everything goes in cycles. In the 90s, it was a big thing under the Clinton administration that you could only be in public housing for 4 years. You had to act at the end of the fourth year. You had a one-year grace because they wanted everybody working, and they, mm-hmm. the focus was moved to work, and you had all these criteria. Then later, people were saying, oh, that's unfair because 5 years is not enough time, and the opinion of Congress changed where by the time we got to New Orleans in 2006, nowhere did anybody in the country want you to put work requirements on families or say if they didn't have a job by the end of the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you were able to get around it, but everybody else had to fight. Some developers were able to win and some weren't. So really, the sentiment of the nation, how they feel about affordable housing and moving people towards self-sufficiency and how much money they're willing to put in the program depends on the administration that's in office.
So if you call your boy, Dr. Ben, tell him, hey, you got some ideas you want to share with him.
I see you have a note here about Ben Carson somewhere. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. We're up to the next item on the agenda, which is, the resolution. We've already done 1439, so we're up to resolution 17-1438.
Resolution 17-1438, we're requesting the Board of Commissioners to approve the new utility allowances for public housing section 8 On page number 4 of the resolution, you're going to see the changes in the utility allowances for 2017.
That's the page behind the resolution, but they're not numbered.
Every time that any of the utility changes 10% up or down, we have to revise and change everything, the forms. So electricity didn't change. Natural gas decreased 8.7%. Propane decreased 19%. Water and sewer increased, depending on the city, up to 26%, city of Lakeland. Trash collection also increased, city of Lakeland, Winter Haven. And for that reason, and that reason alone, we had to implement new utility allowances moving forward.
I missed that last part. You were saying you increased it, the rent?
No,
the utility allowance.
The rent stays the same. Cause
right, because you did allowances.
Yeah, because they're in public housing, and they'll pay more than 30% of their income. And this actually works to the benefit of the residents that we're increasing the utility allowance. It costs us, but, you know, it's to the benefit of the residents.
Which comes back to my question. When do we kind of move them out of it? Instead of giving them this, because I used to live in public housing. I loved it. Because everything is pretty much given to me.
But look where you are now, though.
But
a college graduate, retired career man, you got your own house, car. Hey, you're a role model.
Okay.
But, you know, we put the programs and the like, you know, for the residents. We encourage them to participate. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, obviously we cannot tell them, okay, time for you to go. But, you know, we can just put the carrot in front of them as an incentive, mm-hmm. and that's what we try to do.
Okay. I understand. Okay.
I have a question about it, though. So, like, for the trash collection, mm-hmm. for instance, how it went up in Lakeland, where on the public housing program, like, breakout sheet, would it show, like, is the trash collection?
Yeah, if you go to the form.
The next page.
So it's not on this page?
No, it's not on the next page, the form.
I was able to see it here, but I see that you guys took maybe these numbers from these pages.
No. We have, it's actually, the document is 176 pages.
Okay.
So it's, I didn't want to overwhelm everybody with 176. So we had to go through everything, and at the end of the study, we had to determine based on those numbers and average, which one is going to be, depending on the city or the zip code, which one is going to be applied to you and to your house. And then every house and every apartment is different, depending also, in some cases, depending on how the sun hits the apartment. And so we have to determine a bunch of stuff before we give you the utility allowance.
And back to that page, we just try to give you a summary of all the changes by category and by city. So we thought that would make it easier for you all.
Okay. And so, like, if a resident were to go over their electricity allowance by some amount and go under their water by the same amount,
this is automatically given to them. Let's say you come to us and you're going to pay water electricity, you're going to get $160 regardless what you spend. So,
anything above that, they have to pay.
It's based on the total, not necessarily.
Well, it's based on the unit and the city.
Yeah.
It's not based on the actual bill that they pay.
Yeah, because if they run up a bill that's $500, you know, you pay $160.
Yeah.
That's the independent that Mr. Robinson was talking about.
Yeah, we reviewed this in the recovery meeting, and it's, like I said, you got that document? That's like that thick?
Yeah.
And this is a summary of all of that.
Uh-huh.
But anybody like some bedtime reading, you can get a copy.
If you need, yeah, you want to see the 176 pages, you're welcome to.
We've done this, what, I think just last quarter we did.
How we do that
every year. Well, once a year.
Every year.
Yeah, I know time been flying by since you got that new president, so.
Leave it alone. So, do we have a motion to accept Resolution 17-1438?
I move that we accept Resolution 17-1438.
You have a second?
Second.
Questions? Comments? Roll call?
Commissioner Pimentel?
Aye.
Commissioner Richardson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hall?
Aye.
Commissioner Sanders?
Aye.
Commissioner Perry?
Aye.
Commissioner Robinson?
No.
Okay, Resolution 17-1438 passes. We're on to the last resolution, 17-1440.
Okay, this resolution is associated with Williamstown. In November of 2015, we thought we would be closing at the beginning of January 2016, no later than March. We actually had put out bids, procured the contractor, which happened to be Miller Construction Management, Inc., to do the work and executed the contract with them after the due diligence and we got all the bids back. Unfortunately, we spent 2016 going back and forth with the various HUD offices that actually reviewed the project. We had to get the San Francisco field office satisfied with the design because they didn't like the concept of micro cottages. And they felt uncomfortable with UFAS units having the turning radius in a unit that was 550 square feet. That was probably the longest item that happened. Also, the review panel had concerns about energy efficiency because everybody wants to go to Energy Star, but there are two issues that we had at the time. The city of Lakeland has adopted a code that tries to bring up the level of energy efficiency. But when you're doing micro cottages, a lot of the appliances that you have to put in are too big to go into those units. So that was another reason why we couldn't really, it would have driven the cost up too high. It would have been cost prohibitive. So by the time we got the project approved, got all the changes in that satisfied HUD Washington, HUD Miami, HUD San Francisco, it was August 16, 2016. We submitted evidentiary documents to HUD's Office of General Counsel in D.C., only to be stopped in our tracks by the deed restriction. And even though the contractor had held his price from November 17, 2015, now we've gotten into code changes. The city of Lakeland changed their code. If I didn't get under construction last year, we were going to have to go to the new code. So while we were submitting documents to the Office of General Counsel, we were also running back to the architects and say, hey, you got to bring these documents up to code. And so with this change order, what this resolution is, requesting authorization to increase the construction contract amount by $647,000 to address the changes that occurred with this project not happening in 2015, not happening in 2016. Now we're on the new code when we get started in 2017. And one of the items that I wanted to just pass around is the fact that when we did our amended mixed finance proposal submission to HUD, we gave HUD the same documents that we gave, that the contractor gave the architect to show that even though he had been selected for the award, for each item that changed, they went back and got bids. And so I'll just pass that around because that's in section 4 for you to see. And so you can see the due diligence that was done. HUD has looked at the documents. They're willing to close. They understand that if you delay a project by a year and 3 months, that the price is going to increase because you're going to get into code changes.
Did you say you had to go back out for bids for this project?
Well, the GC did. Once the GC is selected, we went through a due diligence mm-hmm. process back in 2015, mm-hmm. and they were selected. They held the price, but even withholding the price, once the city said, if you don't start in 2016, you got to go to the new code, they have to price the changes. So the architect at our last board meeting, I got the email that he reviewed the package, that the costs were fair and reasonable, that they looked at the fact that the actual contractor went back to their subs to get the pricing. So a lot of people that were on my subcontractors list in 2015, mm-hmm. those firms aren't the same firms mm-hmm. because they weren't the low price in bidding when they mm-hmm. bidded out the individual items trying to keep the change order amount down. So I am seeking authorization for the executive director to give them a $649,000 change order so that we can move forward with the construction of Williamtown once we get past the closing, and HUD authorizes us to mobilize the contractor.
Let me see if I understand it again. Did we take this contract out for bid for the 710?
We don't have to take the GC contractors out for bid. Once we did the competitive process in 2015,
right.
we had the lowest and most responsive price.
At that time?
At that time.
Okay.
But the code changes.
I understand that. With the code change and everything else that changed, did he go up in price? Just to accommodate the code.
Yes.
That's with the architect record.
Yeah.
Just to accommodate the code. No additional.
His base contract price stayed the same, mm-hmm. but the additions that you have to do because the code changes, mm-hmm. it may require you to have additional energy efficiency, or they may not like a particular piping mm-hmm. that's in the ground.
And basically, the increases are all due to additional work. That made a long story short. But yeah, they have additional work that's involved with complying with the code. And so that's why you have a price increase.
Okay. And we're comfortable with that then, I guess.
Yeah, that's typical for when you go this long.
We just said that when you go this long, it's like you gotta just rebid it and see if
well,
it's
you
comfortable.
Well, there are two reasons why you can't rebid it or you wouldn't rebid it.
What?
You have a time constraint on money. They will recapture the money. You don't have to rebid it. Once we went through a competitive process mm-hmm. and we got a contractor, he's showing he didn't even have to go back. He could have kept his same subs and said, give me a price. He knows this is federal funds. He wants to make sure that everybody understands that he's trying to get us the best price, not take advantage of the fact that the project's been delayed by a year and 3 months. So he went the extra step going back to each sub and putting that out to the various subcontractors that did the work. So anybody who expressed an interest in bidding with him back in 2015, in addition to the people who got the work, he actually said, okay, I'm going to go back out. It's been a year and 3 months. I hope you still have the most competitive price, but I'm also going to reach back out to these subcontractors who actually wanted to do the work in 2015. If you were trying to say you wanted to do extra validation, yes, you could in theory cancel the solicitation and put it back out, but I'm telling you, you don't have the time to do it. You will end up in a position where we're giving the money back. And since we're not required to do it, and that has been submitted to HUD, and HUD sees that he went through extra due diligence, he didn't have to. For instance, when you do the redevelopment projects like Westlake, we do a competitive process. We ask for RFP. They bring in a team. The Westlake developer got the contract based on him and the architect and the GC that he presented when he submitted his proposal. But because they know they're using federal funds and they're trying to get the best price, even the Westlake developer, even though he could have used the construction company that was part of the team that was awarded Westlake overall redevelopment, he put his drawings out to bid too. Once you go through the competitive price the first time, you don't have to keep going through it. And the reason being is with construction time is money. Code changes, availability changes, and they know that if you have funds that have to be expended, if you keep trying to second guess yourself, you won't get the project done in time. We have gotten every extension that is feasible to get. even if we had the same administration we had before. Even though this is 1999 funds and those funds did not have an expiration as far as when you had to obligate, now the pressure has changed. As soon as the elections happened, Miami field office was saying, hey, you guys got to get close. What is happening with this deed restriction matter? They sent another email in January saying, you need to show evidence that you've got it resolved and can close, or we're going to have to recapture the money.
Okay. That's what I'm beat that one to death. You had a question? Ms. Perry?
You're done. Yeah. I was just going to make a statement that we are on a time crunch based off of your last statement saying that we have to expend a certain amount of funds this year or else it gets taken away.
Right.
And so that amount of funds that we have to use this year, is it already known like what we're going to use it for and like what it's going to go to?
If the schedule base has already been applied, as part of doing that package that I'm routing,
mm-hmm.
we have to say this funds is paying for except that. And
the project budget, when you submit that to HUD, you have to identify the funding sources. And so that's what HUD reviews and stuff. That's what we call a mixed financial indenture. But all your financing sources are identified and they have to be approved by HUD. And once that's approved by HUD, you can't change it without HUD permission. And so and they're also aware of the deadlines and all that that's involved with the markets. Because Juan Miranda is our former contact.
And so increasing by $600K takes away from something else.
Yes.
What does that take away from?
Well, the funding has to be used for affordable housing. So that $647,000 I won't have to do on another project. But if we don't close, you won't have those 48 units that you were going to do, you wouldn't have. And then the money that you were planning to have to do it, $4 million of it would go away because there's no, even with Westlake, it has 4% tax credits. They're planning to close in July. But even if I gave them the money, they wouldn't have enough pre-development expenses to eat up that $4 million before the end of the year.
And basically, the bottom line is this, is that with every project of this size, you have delays for whatever reason. Either, you know, you don't get, like, say, your tax credits, or you have a change in design. There's always something that comes up. So this is not unusual and stuff because like I said, I worked on a project whereby, you know, we had to wait a whole year because we didn't get the tax credit funding that we went after. So delays are a part of the business as it comes to territory and stuff. But as long as you keep moving and keep making progress, which is what we're doing, and sometimes you have to work with the contractor to hold their price, okay? But that's all a part of the business and stuff. You all are just being exposed to a lot of it and stuff, but this is typical for projects this size.
And part of the HUD due diligence, they needed to make sure that we could spend the money. So in that package is a draw schedule that shows you how every down to the penny every piece of funding will be spent between now.
What a draw schedule is that once a month you have to make a payment to the contractors. That's called a draw. And it gives you the details of what work they have done and what they're billing you for. Okay. And so, and you basically take your whole project budget and divide it over, say, like, say, 18 months. And each month, so that's like 18 draws. And so each month, you'll look at a draw, and that's called a draw schedule.
And the key thing in that particular one are their yellow highlightings of where the funding is coming, where it has to be expended. So one of the good things, for example, we could use is you have some RHF money from 2009 that got extended. But that's outside of the whole six. It can only be extended one time to the fund. So that extension of having it expended is actually July of this year. One of the grants is like $450,000. The good thing is the permit costs $430,000. So when we close, I'm going to eat up the bulk of that money at closing. Those are the type of things that HUD looks at to see if you realistically can spend the money during the time frame. And after reviewing the package, they are seeking to close.
But that's got to be done before July, right?
That piece of it. Because one set comes due in July, the other set comes due December 31st.
So that's all the more reason that we need to approve this and get this going and get this done.
Because
if we don't, we'll lose that $430,000, we'll lose this whole contract, and we won't be able to build anything. And no houses will be get, nothing will be get done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Because
I make
don't
a motion we approve resolution.
Any more delays.
Resolution 17-1440.
So is this the only delay, or this is an additional delay to the deed issue?
The deed is the only thing that the attorneys are waiting to. They're waiting for the opinion letter to give to the title company to add to the closing package. Everything else is ready to go, has been ready to go.
Yeah, yeah, several things that run on parallel tracks.
We have a motion to approve.
Second.
And we have a second. The motion to approve was first from Commissioner Hall. Second was Commissioner Richardson. Okay, any more questions, comments? Roll call.
Commissioner Pimentel.
Aye.
Commissioner Richardson.
Yeah, aye.
Commissioner Hall.
Aye.
Commissioner Sanders.
Aye.
Commissioner Perry.
Aye.
Commissioner Robbins.
Aye. Okay, resolution 17-1440 passes. Then we're up to the next item on our agenda, which is our legal report.
Good evening, Mr. Stevenson. Advance my report.
Submitted as written. Okay.
Also, be aware now that you do development, the administration report is going to become a lot longer than what it is.
No, I'm going to submit it. I'm going to just do the finances the rest of
it. That's my report.
Okay. Then we're up to item number 9, other business executive director contract. As we discussed last time in our last board meeting, myself and Mr. Stevenson met and to discuss provisions of his new contract, and he agreed that he'd like to just continue with the same contract that he has now, and the only two things will change: the salary that's in there currently and the dates. So everyone has received and read that contract, so you're aware of what that contract is, and the only changes would be the salary and the dates. So any questions?
What's the length of the contract?
3 years with a 2-year extension, exactly how it is now.
Okay. Didn't change. And the salary portion to be negotiated?
Well, his current salary will go in there. You know, it'll start with the current salary.
Yeah.
And then
it's escalated.
Yes, yes. As it is currently in the contract now.
That's increasing how much per year? What percentage? Did it say?
It's not an automatic increase.
No, it's not.
You all.
It's up to yearly. Okay.
Yeah. It's to be reviewed every year.
Yes.
At our discretion.
Yeah. And based on what was just said by the chair, the only reason why the salary has been changed is that was what was negotiated when he was first hired. His actual salary is different.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then that's it. I say then we can go with a motion to accept a motion to approve the executive director's contract. We have a motion.
Make a motion that we approve the executive director's contract.
We have a second.
A second.
Any questions? Comments? Roll call.
Commissioner Pimentel.
Aye.
Commissioner Richardson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hall.
Aye.
Commissioner Sanders.
Aye.
Commissioner Perry.
Aye.
Commissioner Robbins.
Aye.
Okay. Executive director's contract has been approved. Any other business? Then we are adjourned.
someone who wrote that.
I'd rather break that.
Quick.
Are you going to be in on the March 16th on that Thursday? You working?
Meeting adjourned at 7:10.
Well, you are going to see me there.